Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth, not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Dale McGowan, my special guest today. If you don't know who he is, if you've never heard him speak or read any of his columns or read his books or whatever, hang on, because you're going to be so glad you did. I just admire him so much. I bumped into him at a convention a few weeks ago, and we just started talking. We're just standing there having a conversation, and it was so good just to talk to him. I said, look, Dale, would you come back on the show and we can sort of do this in front of an audience? Can we just have this sort of dialogue about life, the universe, and everything? Because he has such a good perspective on the culture, on media, on bias, on changing minds, even our own, the pitfalls of trying to be an activist in this world, especially on the internet. How do we not die inside as we see the insanity all around us? And Dale just has so much good stuff. And he's my guest today, and I'm so glad to have him. There is video of this conversation. That YouTube link is in the description box of the show. Dale, I don't really know exactly how to slate you or introduce you because you have so many titles. You've done so much. So I'll just let you take that baton. Who are you, Dale McGowan?
Well, at the moment, I am chief content officer for Only Sky, for this new media venture. But in the past, I wrote books about non-religious life. I've been a college professor. I founded a humanist foundation. So it's a checkered career, but at the moment it's heart and soul into Only Sky.
Yeah, we've talked in the past about secular parenting. This is probably a subject we're going to have to cover again. A lot of people are like, how do I keep from indoctrinating my child into atheism, right? How do I teach a child how to think instead of what to think? And you've done a lot of work on that. I know that you've written. What was the title of the book? I know I titled the show similar to the book, and I don't want to get it wrong. What was the book title?
Well, there was Parenting Beyond Belief and then also Raising Freethinkers.
And what is the difference? I mean, someone's already going to like try to pin me down. What's the difference between indoctrinating and educating if you are an atheist trying to keep your kids shielded from religious nonsense? How do we avoid those pitfalls?
No, absolutely. Indoctrination is actually harder to do. If you are opening your child up to making their own decisions about things, and if you are really owning that as a high value, then you're not going to indoctrinate. If you say out loud to your child, here's what I believe, you know, I've thought about it and come to this conclusion, it's what I think is true, but you get to make up your own mind, I will love you no less, no matter what you decide, that's not indoctrination. The moment that you open those possibilities up, you're doing something much better.
For the video viewer and the podcast, audio podcast listeners won't know what I'm talking about, but there's some writing behind you, and I can't decide, are you trying to solve pi? Are you opening a black hole with some equation or something? What am I looking at, just to be sure? What is that?
I realize when I see it on camera that it's a little bit like that, A Beautiful Mind?
Yeah.
Connecting out. No, it's just my whiteboard. I've got calendars and notes and all that sort of thing. And for some of these projects I'm working on, I need to see everything all at once and see how things are connected, which actually sounds conspiratorial.
Are you a visual learner? Like people learn better with auditory, or they read, or they need examples. So
yeah,
that's your thing.
That's all it is. Yeah. So I stand in front of it sometimes and weep.
I think I learn better when I'm shown examples or when I see an object lesson. If somebody sends me instructions on paper and I read them, I start to glaze over. I don't see it in three dimensions. I wish I had more. I guess it's maybe an engineer's way of looking at it, where you can see it and dissect it.
Remember the ASVAB test, if that was a thing when you were in school, but the Armed Services Vocational Aptitudes Board, they gave it to all the high school kids. There are things like repositioning something in three-dimensional space and what does it look like, A, B, C, D. And apparently I did so well on that Marine recruiters were after me.
I remember the Myers-Briggs test. That was a whole other thing. I've come to realize that that's just total crap. That test is not a reliable test. But right. I remember employers would give it. It was kind of a personality test, really, to try to determine who you were as a human being, if you were worth hiring or bringing onto an organization. And I think that's been largely debunked. I don't mean to throw that out there. It's kind of random.
I think that's right. I think they've found that it's astrology, basically. It gives you sort of this feeling that you're in this meaningful category and that you can categorize the world, but it's evidently not.
So let's talk about this Only Sky transition. This is not a commercial for Only Sky, even though I would gladly do a 90-minute commercial for Only Sky. I love you guys. Okay. But this is a product. It's one of the end results of some other things that took place. And this is relevant because I think it speaks to how media affects us, the things we don't know about our sources of information, and why there has been kind of a seismic shift among many columnists, activists, authors, et cetera, within the free thought movement. Can you start me at square one with the Pathos thing and kind of what happened, and just take your time with that?
Yeah, sure. Pathos was a multi-belief website that was started now. Gosh, it's been 8 years ago, 9 years ago, I think, that they actually launched it. And it was launched by these absolutely fantastic people, Leo and Kathy Brunick. And the intention was to host the conversation on faith. And they had writers, bloggers from all different traditions, Buddhist and Catholic and evangelical and Mormon and so on. And they had a non-religious section as well. And I was the managing editor of the non-religious section for 7 years. And we had the largest non-religious presence online, the bloggers that we had there. At one point, we had nearly 50 writers, including Hemant Mehta, Friendly Atheist, and J.T. Eberhardt, and just a really wide range of phenomenal writers. Then Pathos was sold to an evangelical company, BN Media. And then the fun began, because it was a little less of a comfortable fit. They were much more uncomfortable with the open dialogue that we had for so long. And they were certainly uncomfortable with the non-religious blogs.
I mean, if I can jump in, the question then becomes, why were they uncomfortable? What was the rift there?
Yeah, it was really a difference between Leo and Kathy's vision of the place, which was, hey, let's talk, let's get all these ideas out there. And when you have an evangelical company, they are really, it comes down to advertisers is what it ultimately came down to for them, a business decision. They had a lot of evangelical advertisers, including Liberty University was about a third of the advertising income for the site. And Liberty didn't want to advertise next to the non-religious blogs. And we were half the site traffic. So that was a problem. Their biggest advertiser didn't want to advertise by their biggest blogs. And so we wrestled with that for ages. I lost a lot of stomach lining trying to stand between the writers and the staff. Jay Sekulow is a board member for the company, one of Trump's lawyers. And he was apparently infuriated by some of the things that we would write, and there would be a phone call or, you know, an attempt to say, you know, can you take that? Ed Brayton used to really tear Seculo a new one. And, you know, we always refused. And so I was there in the middle. Well, about a year, a little over a year ago now, everything changed, everything shifted. And Pathos began saying, you're no longer going to be able to criticize other worldviews. We want you to just stick within your own worldview and talk about your own worldview. And we also don't want you talking about politics anymore.
Well, what? I mean, what else is going on right now in the world? I mean, you know, what is that?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that it was not only what we did. It was something that just rendered anything else that we could do close to meaningless, you know. And the fact is, they have another website that pretty much does that. BeliefNet is a site that's much more sort of how you can be the best you, and here are 10 interesting things you might not have known about Judaism, and just very substance-free, in my opinion, most of the time. That's just not what we did. And so I went to the writers and said, are you comfortable with these new guidelines? And they mostly said, no, I've got to get out of here. Well, it so happened that I was already talking to Sean Harden, who is the CEO and founder of Only Sky, about this new venture. And we had started putting this together before this happened with Pathos. So then we sort of changed the plan and decided to bring aboard the writers who expressed an interest in doing that and who fit with the new vision of what we were doing, which is different from Pathos non-religious. So we wanted to create this all secular space. Then we had this transition over the course of a year that was aggravating and painful. And it was only once we were all transitioned into Only Sky that we learned the reason for that sudden change of policy at Pathos. Pathos had been acquired by the Mormon Church. They had actually been bought by the Mormon Church, and that was the shift. And they didn't tell us. I didn't know. So for a year, Friendly Atheist was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That is just the kicker to this. And it just really underlines the fact that this was the right thing to do to get out of there.
I'm glad you did. I'll actually enjoy the format of Only Sky. It makes it easier to share with even my religious friends, because you don't just deal with free thought issues, et cetera. It's sort of the culture at large. You've got a much larger tent. But I was thinking to myself, what they wanted you to be was really just a sort of an empty calories. I mean, it sounds to me like they weren't putting the same restrictions on religious writers, authors, columnists, editorialists, et cetera. I'm sure they were probably given carte blanche to be able to promote their faith. They simply wanted the critics of the faith, you know, the skeptics, the people dismantling and deconstructing, they were probably, I would suppose, were going to be held to a harsher standard. I don't know. Was that your impression? I realize it's a subjective impression, but.
The interesting thing is, toward the end, it was so low information. I mean, I wasn't having anything shared with me that I don't even know what the communications were like with the other parts of Pathos. My guess is that the other channel that might have been most affected was actually some of the progressive Christian blogs, who really go hard after the evangelicals and hard after conservatives, just as hard as we did. So my guess is that I haven't even checked, because I no longer care, but
yeah, I get it.
That's my guess.
You know, that's interesting, and it's something I'm glad you brought up. I've been taken to task because some people think I'm too soft on religious people. And I think some of this becomes maybe a product of their frustration. They see the hardline evangelical MAGA, you know, the right-wing zealots who have infected the culture, going after the courts and the laws and the school boards, et cetera. But then they see the more moderate Christian, and they sort of make them guilty by association. When you call yourself a Christian in this country, I mean, you're part of that club. If you're not, you know, burning your own house down because it's evil, you are part of the problem. And I'm just not that guy. I know people who are deeply religious who are just as grieved about the injustices against our fellow human beings as we are. We disagree on the God question, but we are allies in terms of values. I follow a pastor online. We disagree theologically. His name is John Pavlovitz. He's a freaking humanist. I love the guy. I know we've got Christians Against Christian Nationalism, and, you know, they've got a whole organization and website with Tony Campolo and others. And so I want to talk a little bit about this Do I call it interfaith? I mean, this idea that we need to stop putting people in boxes and that many people who hold a God belief are actually on our side and criticizing their own camp. Fair enough.
They really are. And I was sort of on that side of the discussion for a long time. I mean, I sort of held moderate believers to a standard saying that you need to be doing more to dismantle what's going on.
And I think we still hold to that, not to interrupt, but I mean, it's not like we're giving him a total pass.
No, not in the least, not in the least. But like you said, they are actually, there are an awful lot of them who are doing a tremendous amount of this work. I mean, the fact is, when you see a schism go up the middle of the Episcopal Church over LGBTQ rights, when you see a division going up the middle of the Methodist Church or whatever it is, that's it. That is members of these congregations and of these denominations saying enough is enough. I'm drawing the line here. We are not going to be hateful toward LGBTQ people or whatever the other issue is. It's happening all the time. Catholics, progressive Catholics in the United States are fighting for reproductive rights, and they are fighting against a lot of the regressive stuff that conservative Catholics are doing. It's actually happening right in front of our eyes in these schisms, and we're still not giving them credit for that fight. Because I think what we're really doing is insisting that they step away from it completely. They step away from the theology completely. The beliefs are not as important as values. And if this is somebody who shares values with us about how to make the world more humane, then we need to be working together instead of pushing them aside.
You know, you mentioned the schisms. I'm thinking of the tumult going on in the Southern Baptist Convention. Talk about an identity crisis of a denomination, right? The Baptist Church was already splintered, but it's just getting worse and worse, especially as the corruption and abuses are being revealed at the highest levels of the SBC. And, you know, we've seen it within the Methodist Church, the Episcopalians. You know, there are now whole church denominations that are allowing LGBT clergy, where before they weren't even allowed to be a member of the church. And I feel like you feel, I think we think these are things to be celebrated. I would much rather have a more moderate, more accepting umbrella church that loves people than the hardline stuff that it came out of.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And it's more important. Those things are more important than whether somebody thinks that, you know, God exists. That is really relative trivia compared to how we're treating each other. And we ought to know that as humanists. So I think our tendency to create a very pure idea of what's acceptable and what we're trying to hold on to is self-defeating.
I think, too, you know, we sometimes do fall into that superior attitude. Atheist smart, religious dumb. Oh, yeah. Atheist good, religious bad. I don't see quite as much of it as I used to. But, I mean, it used to be really bad. Some of the memes that were shared out there, this, you know, and first I'm like, well, I've met some idiots across the board. Like, humans are humans for better and worse, and atheists are very human. But I also was struck by, is this how we change the culture? Like, by throwing stones at people and saying, you're an idiot. Has anyone ever looked at the other person and said, you know what, you're absolutely right. I'm a total idiot. I'm now going to change my entire position on everything. Can we talk about changing minds from your perspective?
No, absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And the fact is, when we were 8%, of the culture, then throw stones because you're not going to change the culture anyway. You know, just have your fun, feel superior. That was 1990 is when the no religion percentage was around 8. Now we're approaching a third in the United States, approaching 1 in 3 adults who are not affiliated with a religious label. And now I think we have a responsibility to step up and actually assert our presence and our values. And to do that, we really need to embrace the most intelligent way forward. And just like you said, the most intelligent way, the way to change minds, the way to actually get things done is not to call people morons. You know, it just doesn't work for anybody. And the fact, I shouldn't say it doesn't work for everybody, because every once in a while, I do hear from somebody who says, you know what, I was a believer until Christopher Hitchens, you know, pointed out that I was a moron. We keep listening to those unusual people, and I think it's great that person exists. Most others don't in that way. Most others are going to move toward a positive vision instead of saying, okay, you're right, I'm stupid.
Well, if I can, though. I mean, as a guy who has written a book called Christianity Made Me Talk Like an Idiot, there's a difference between somebody who's watching from a position of relative safety and they see, you know, kind of an anti-theist like Hitchens, but they don't feel like Hitchens was sitting across the table pointing his finger saying, you're a moron. He was speaking really more as an umbrella term about the idiocy of religion. But this person may feel less personally attacked. And I think that's different than if I was to sit down with Dale McGowan, the devout worship pastor, believer, and say, you're stupid for thinking this stuff. I think those are two different scenarios. I think mockery and satire do have their place. I mean, you'd hold to that, right? I mean, sometimes you got to ridicule the ridiculous in certain contexts.
Oh, hell yeah. That's one of the reasons that we've got a comedy section, you know, at Only Sky. There's nothing in the world wrong with that. But ultimately, that is, as much as anything, I think it's for us. You know, that's something that is not intended in most cases to change minds. I think what you have to do is say, to make somebody reexamine where they are theologically, you've got to give them an option. You've got to give them an alternative. And a lot of people who are in the church now don't see an alternative. They see that I can either be in this place that satisfies all these various needs for me, including social needs and community and all these sorts of things that have nothing to do with theology. Or I can go to this very ill-defined place that doesn't give me those things, this other side, this secular side. And in most cases, I think that's what we have to address. That's what we have to actually create so that people are comfortable reexamining where they are.
Talking here with Dale McGowan, he is, among many things, the chief content officer for Only Sky. Bring up an interesting point about asking people to walk away from not just a theological belief, but an entire support network. I think one of the reasons that Christians call themselves devout Christians while being almost completely biblically illiterate is because they are practicing a cultural faith. So here we are, and we say, well, you need to, we think you would be better if you leave religion. By the way, we don't have the infrastructure that the church has. You know, we don't have the childcare, and we don't have the hospital visits, and we don't have the community events, and we don't have the gatherings and the weekly thing. You know, we aren't. Are we all? How do I even phrase this question? I worry that we don't have anything to offer beyond saying abandon what you once held dear and those who shared that belief with you. We have a real challenge here, don't we?
We absolutely do. And the fact is, this isn't a question mark, really. This is something that there's been some good sociology done on the reason that people go to church. The reason people are affiliated has very little to do with the theology. It doesn't have to do with a fear of hell or a hope of heaven. That is a much smaller part of it than we tend to think. It has to do with community. It has to do with the way one of the studies put it was getting together on a regular basis with people who share your values and doing something meaningful. That was the summary statement for this University of Wisconsin and Harvard study that just determined that the reason people are there, once they tease out all the variables, the reason people are there is other people and the structures that they're able to create in mutual support. And then the theology is tacked on. The theology is something that you get together and sing about and so on, but that is not the reason people are there. And to look at it from the other side, when I was at the American Atheist Convention a couple of weeks ago, I did some interviews. I interviewed 22 people who were there, and I asked a series of questions. And one of the questions I asked is, if you were once religious, what do you miss from religion? What's something that, you know, you don't want to go back, that's fine, but what's something you miss? And virtually every single person I asked said the same thing. They said community. I miss the feeling of community, of being connected to other people that I knew, people who would see you on a Sunday and they'd smile and they'd come towards you and give you a hug and ask how you're doing. And that's what they missed. We don't have that in the same way. And there's absolutely no reason we can't build that. It doesn't require theology. It doesn't require a belief in God to build that kind of thing. But we've got to figure out what the glue is going to be. What's the meaning that's going to pull us together? And I think it's going to be essentially about being human, about recognizing that basic humanness.
One of the challenges we have, though, is there seems to be a thinking people like to surrender to the church, this idea that gathering is religious, a religious exercise. I've heard the American Atheist Convention. Why would I go to atheist church? I left one herd. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to another herd. I find this monumentally frustrating. I'll let you speak to that. Gathering is church. What do you think, Dale?
I think there are an awful lot of things that we cede to the church, ridiculously. They have built over the course of centuries this institution that is intended to meet human needs. And it does it sometimes in a way that is twisted and toxic, yes. But actually the purpose of it has been to fill in these gaps in our existential predicament. That's what it's about. So if we're going to say, oh, no, churches gather, I'm not going to gather. Or we're going to say, no, churches sing, I'm not going to sing. I remember years ago, Tom Flynn wrote a piece about that called Why Seculars Don't Sing. And it was just a stunning piece and a stunning statement to me that we were going to give that away simply because it had religious fingerprints on it and was this sort of, I think the gist of the piece was that it's this collective assent to an idea, and we don't do collective assent. We have, you know, we're more individual. I'm not going to give up singing, and I'm not going to give up gathering together with other people. We just need to find ways to do it. For those who want it, we need to find ways to do it that don't have the toxic side effects.
Well, I think, too, there's the question of efficacy if we're going out to do activist work, right? I think, aren't we better together? I'd rather have 500 people at the American Atheist National Convention join me to help feed 50,000 people through a charity effort than be sitting over there with a box and the basic ingredients trying to do it myself. And I think that's a great metaphor for a great many flavors of activism out there. Aren't we better together?
We are better together. And the sooner we recognize that, one of the reasons I think we're slow to recognize that is that most of the people who formed the free thought movement in the beginning, most of the people who came together in, let's say, the 60s and the 70s, were people who found it easy to walk away from that sort of thing. They found it easy to walk away from the collective aspect and the community aspect of religion. They're sort of science-minded loners, is the way I refer to myself. You know, I am an introvert. I primarily don't seek out groups. And it's people like me who were able to walk away and create this movement. That's lovely. But we are not normal. We are not most people. Most people need community. And the way you know it is because most people are in frickin' church. That's actually the evidence that it's satisfying a need. So a lot of people come out of church, they disaffiliate, and something like 30% in the course of any given year who have disaffiliated go back to church within that year because their needs are not being met. And it's not theological needs, it's not heaven and hell stuff, it's those social needs, that community.
Oh, I get a lot of emails. It's weird how many I get. And somebody's like, well, my spouse is a Christian. I go, you know, I know the message is kind of crap, but I enjoy it. I enjoy singing and I enjoy seeing my friends, getting coffee, and I enjoy the ritual and structure of it. And it does, it meets a human need. And I think some people would raise an eyebrow and go, well, why would you ever darken the door of a church? I think it makes total sense, right? It's a human connection. We're communal creatures and we've evolved to be so. You have a few minutes to sort of do a little social analyses and commentary real fast. I want to talk about the culture. You doing okay for time?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, stand by for more with Dale McGowan right after this.
Hello, welcome to We Dissent, a monthly podcast by four secular women who also happen to be powerhouse attorneys at the major secular organizations in the United States. I'm Rebecca Markert with the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and I'll be one of your co-hosts.
I'm Monica Miller with the American Humanist Association and another co-host. Join us as we discuss developments affecting the separation of church and state in the United States Supreme Court and the lower federal courts.
I'm Allison Gill with American Atheists, another co-host. We'll also explore the other advocacy work we do to help atheists and other non-religious people outside the courtroom.
And I'm Liz Cavell, the final co-host, also with the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We know there are so many atheist podcasts and legal podcasts, and you have a lot to choose from. But we hope you'll join us, the only legal podcast for atheists and agnostics hosted completely by female lawyers.
We can't wait to start these conversations. Look for our first episodes in the spring of 2022, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I appreciate your support as a patron. If you become a patron, you get the show 2 days early, totally commercial free. Patreon.com/Seth Andrews is the link. Talking here with Dale McGowan, columnist, author, and chief content officer for OnlySky.media. So as part of a media, I call it a media organization, OnlySky, we're watching all of these power players in the world of media and information, the Fox News thing. But beyond that, you know, with Elon jumping into Twitter, and we see all of these sort of extremely powerful and influential point position people behind the flow of information, or at least sort of guiding or affecting the flow of information. How do you become a content officer for a media organization without falling into those traps, right? When it just becomes a series of opinion pieces that reflect your values. And beyond that, I mean, are we guiding the information, or is the information sort of herding us like sheep? It's a broad question, brother. I'm sorry to throw it out. I just want you to take that where you want. Let's talk about media in the year 2022.
Yeah, media in the year 2022. It's a terrifying place. I mean, it's really problematic. The siloing is awful. So one of the intentions that we have, and one of the challenges we have, is to embrace a wide enough community that we're actually able to bring in a variety of opinions and points of view, and serve that community, and at the same time coalesce it into something meaningful. So if we created a website for self-described atheists and humanists, that would be a very, very narrow percentage. And we could speak just to that silo and to those exact points of view, and never challenge anybody, you know, never challenge ourselves. That's easy to do. That's the Fox News model. What we're looking for is to broaden out to the unaffiliated audience, which again is 1 in 3 adults in the United States, something like 84 million people. Some of them are self-declared atheists. Some of them say, I have no religion. Some of them say, I'm spiritual, but not religious. And we get all hung up on the spiritual part and not notice that the person just said, I'm not religious, right? And then there are others who never think about it. They don't care. A lot of them are Generation Z. A lot of people in Generation Z right now have no religious identity or beliefs, but they are basically apatheists. They just, it's not something that is forefront of their mind. We can look at all of those people and say, not our kind. You know, these are people who are not committing to the label or whatever it is. Or we can say, you know what? These are the people who share the values that we're trying to get into the society. Values of, you know, using science to respond to a pandemic, for example. Recognizing that climate change is real. Recognizing that LGBTQ rights do not interfere with my rights. Recognizing that people should have a right to die on their own terms at the end of their lives. There are things that the non-religious actually support in very, very high numbers and percentages across those lines. We are trying to create a place where that wider range of secular perspective is available. For example, we've got Hemant Mehta. We've got Hemant doing the same kind of content and religious criticism that he's done. But then we also have Well, I love a piece that about a month ago that one of our editors wrote that was called, I'm non-religious, but I kind of hope reincarnation is a thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's something nobody would have said out loud 10 years ago. She doesn't actually think reincarnation is a thing, but it bugs her that she's never going to see it again. No, it just bugs her. So she wrote this fantastic piece that's the kind of thing that we think. But a lot of times we're just not able to let those thoughts out because, you know, we've got our litmus tests, we've got our self-definition. What we're trying to do to answer the question and how we avoid that sort of silo is that we're really trying to define the non-religious in a very broad way and then allow a lot of different opinion in to that so that people can find things that challenge where they are. We talk about the earthquake of perspective being something that we're trying to do as often as possible. Have a piece in which the writer talks about changing his or her mind over the course of time, or brings new information to the reader so that the reader can re-examine something in a way they haven't thought about it again, instead of constantly reinforcing what we already think. That's the essence of your question. How do you get away from media that just reinforces what the audience already thinks?
Well, and it's funny, I just did an interview recently on somebody else's show. They were kind enough to invite me, but I think a point of difference, I think they took issue with what I feel is a legitimate concern that the Twitterverse is increasingly causing us to retreat into a pod. And then if there's like some sort of ideological impurity within that pod, then that pod splits, right? And then that pod splits again until where I've become so myopic and my world looks so much like me, or I've become so dogmatic, for lack of a better word, that I'm not really properly interacting with the rest of the world. And in the age of the internet, I'm terrified of this. COVID has not helped. So validate me, Dale. I mean, tell me you're seeing some of this out there.
Everywhere. Yeah. I'm seeing it everywhere. Exactly what you're describing. That's what we're trying to get away from. And the problem with there's a combination that makes the problem. The problem is that we have more information than ever before. But because of these silos, we get a false impression that we are getting all the information, right? Because we have all the access to information, we say, oh, I'm fully informed. I'm in touch with the internet, you know? And then we surround ourselves with people that believe exactly as we do. And another silo is doing the same, and another silo is doing the same. And the combination, the paradoxical combination of all the information in the world and a silo can lead you to feel, it's like when somebody on social media says, do your research, right?
Yeah.
What they're saying is, I found an opinion that agrees with me. I did my research. That's the sort of conundrum of the internet, is that we have the ability to silo ourselves in the face of plenty.
Well, I think, too, there's this misguided thinking that if I'm an atheist, I'm automatically a rationalist, and I'm then immune from my biases. Mm. I've read articles. I've seen stuff. I've shared stuff. And I'm like, this totally validates what I've been saying all along. And because of that, I only read the first three lines of the article, or I didn't fact check the article, or I didn't look at the source closely enough. I just knew it was true in my heart because it validated what I already thought. Atheists do this all the time. We are not immune. And it's so frustrating because I feel like we become intolerant of self-reflection. We're afraid to admit that we might be weak because we're ceding ground to the other side, and the other side is so much worse. That may be the case, but it doesn't mean that we're not imperfect creatures, right?
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really helpful is to stop thinking of ourselves as atheists and start thinking of ourselves as humans. We're just people. And the people sitting in churches are also people. I think they're people who got a question wrong, you know, and are acting on it maybe in a way that that I don't like. But if we start to call ourselves human and recognize how screwed up our species is, and it makes sense that we are, because we were adapted for a world that has no resemblance to the world we're living in. I mean, it is hard to be a human being. It's really hard. And so anytime that I think I've got it mastered, I've got to recognize that, A, it's not true, and B, any level of mastery I've got is due in many cases to advantages I've got that a lot of other people don't have. I think it's one of the reasons that I'm not religious. I have had advantages that a cousin of mine doesn't have, for example. So once you start to recognize that there is a human predicament that we're all in, and that we're trying to solve for meaning, we're trying to deal with the fact that we die, that's screwed up. that we it's just not okay that we die. And one of the responses to the predicament is religion. We still have the predicament. The predicament hasn't changed. So we still have to address it in other ways. And one of the ways is to come together, you know, and to recognize, to see that other person and to say, yeah, you're dealing with the same thing. In your head, in your heart, you're dealing with the same thing. What can we do for each other?
In my own heart, I'm doing a speech, actually, I've just prepared, and I'm about to give a speech out on the road that talks about how I realized that a part of my heart was going numb. And a lot of it was because I was treating Twitter like real life, you know, Facebook like real life. And a lot of the clickbaity headlines that came in that were punching at my outrage centers, right? It knew where my buttons were. It knew how to push them. And it began to affect negatively how I treated other people, especially on the internet. And outrage is addictive, right? I mean, would you agree? Outrage fires up parts of our brains that maybe even make us feel more alive, even if they aren't healthy. Can you speak to outrage from your perspective, Dale?
Outrage is a problem, especially when it's an end. And a lot of media has outrage as an end. That's the purpose, because that's what drives you to click, and that's what drives advertising revenue. We actually have a term at Only Sky called Galotti, G-A-L-O-T-I, which stands for get a load of this idiot.
And I'm stealing that, Dale. No, yeah. I'll give due credit, but that's a term I'm going to borrow in my own world.
It's
awesome.
It's very valuable. Basically, I think it's perfectly fine to call out bad behavior, but we get addicted to Galotti posts. We get addicted to saying, look at this idiot pastor in Florida who did such and such a thing. And then everybody gathers around it and goes, ah, what an idiot. And then we go on to the next point and shoot article. That's not what we want to do. Outrage is fine when it motivates action, when it motivates you to make the world a better place. I am outraged that people are not taking climate change seriously and so on. That's fine. But get a load of this idiot is something that just doesn't do us any good. There is always an idiot. Always find an idiot. That's not news. I'd actually like to talk about things that are interesting, intriguing, curiosity provoking, the action inducing. All of those things are better than mere outrage for its own sake.
Is that my new, am I going to make that the show title? There is always an idiot. That's kind of catchy. No, maybe not. Maybe I'll choose something else. I've seen, even within activist circles, activism runs this wide spectrum. I get tired of people who talk about the atheist movement or atheist activism as if it's any one thing. You know, I just see it as wildly diverse. But, you know, is this what we've become? You go on Twitter and you get a load of this idiot, and so you share it, and then your people mob, and then they respond, and then you double respond, and then they block you, and you screenshot the block. And I myself have found myself just muting accounts, not because I don't like the people who are posting, but because I find myself emotionally exhausted. Nothing good is coming. My heart is becoming this sort of calloused piece of flesh. You know? I'm sure you've seen a lot of that out there, right? And that's why you've got, that policy at Only Sky? I don't know. How do you gauge the difference between stupidity that you want to draw a circle around and that which you think, well, the cost benefit's not worth it?
Well, one of the things I think that one of the many ways you can differentiate is, are you talking about outliers? I think we fail to recognize, for example, that religion in the United States is shifting dramatically. I think we fail to recognize, for example, the generational shift, the fact that Gen Z religious peers of my kids are different from their parents. And if I continue to just loop them into the whole thing and not recognize that they are much more, to their parents' dismay frequently, they are much more tolerant of LGBTQ and racial justice and so on, which means they are much closer together with my kids, with their secular peers. We need to be talking about that. We need to recognize that that's going on so that we can make use of it and build a larger community instead of finding the ever smaller outliers of the crazy pastor or whatever and focusing in on that.
Oh, I can already hear the binary thinkers going, Dale McGowan just said we should never criticize Marjorie Taylor Greene, which right. I think draws attention to part of the binary problem that we have, right? It's this sort of A, B, black, white, all nothing thinking.
Yeah.
And it's monumentally difficult. Well, she's a major influencer and an elected official who is doing real harm. I mean, that's different than Joe Blow, who's pastor of a 50-person church out in the weeds.
And that's a great point, because her ability to do harm is much more extensive than this 50-person church that you're talking about. And that is so often the case, that these real idiots are actually in this very small pool, and then we enlarge their influence by constantly drawing attention to it.
Let's, as we draw to a close, let's find some silver linings, even if we have to perhaps draw one with our own pen. Do you retain optimism? I find it's more and more difficult. I used to be, I think, more optimistic with the rise of the nuns, but I'm struggling with it these days, and I sure would welcome your perspective about the future. What are you thinking these days?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I don't think there's ever been a time before in my life when I didn't know. I think there have been times when I was really down on the future and times when I was really optimistic, but so much has happened in the last 5 or 6 years that I could never have predicted.
Yeah.
That I feel like I just need to I need to find people who are speaking intelligently about it, more intelligently than I am, and, you know, access a lot of different points of view and learn more about the up and coming generations. You know, how are they going to handle this mess that we've made? I have to answer that with a shrug.
Yeah, well, that's the honest answer. I kind of feel the same.
I hope for the best, but
it's not like we're going to give up, right? It's not like we're going to say, well, you know, we've got real concerns that things are going to improve. I guess we should all just go down to the corner pub and give up, right? We don't want to cede ground. We got to keep fighting. And I'm kind of a crusader anyway. Are you that temperament? Are you one of those guys that's always got to be in the mix with something? Is that you?
No.
That surprises me, because you've been point person at, you know, all these different organizations.
It surprises me too, because I am a genuine introvert. I've stepped into some things that I felt needed doing, but, you know, one of the reasons I then stepped down is because it reaches a point when it needs somebody with that other temperament, you know, somebody who's actually willing to step in that way.
Dale, don't hide your light under a bushel, man. You've got to let it shine. There's a little religious speak for everybody, right, just to cap the show. Real fast, once again, to recap, where do people find you and your work, and OnlySky, if you would?
Yes, the place to go is OnlySky.media, and that's actually the best place to find my current work as well. I'm also at DaleMcGowan.com. But OnlySky is the main place now.
Fantastic. I will put those links in the description box. It's always so good to talk to you. You are that mix of kindness and strength that I really do welcome. It's just good medicine for this particular host, my friend. And I look forward to a chance to talk again soon, okay?
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Seth. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.